Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. We are back after a week off due to my personal technical difficulties. My body wasn't functioning the way it's supposed to, but I'm doing a whole lot better now. And I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Jerry Oates and Bobby Simmons. How are you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing great.
I'm good now. I'm home.
But you know, Bobby and I got to talking about you, and he said that you was in rehab trying to get off NyQuil. I don't know.
He was.
We discussed that. I don't know the truth.
No. Seriously, last week I had to get off. I had taken so many different types of things trying to kick whatever this stuff is. It's still lingering some, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was.
We'll get you a flask so you can put your NyQuil in it, you know, and carry it with you.
I bet they told him he's the first person they've ever seen that used the IV NyQuil in.
Pumps it straight in. That's good. How's the knees, Dr. Oates?
Bobby, they're doing good. You know, the beginning of the show, I appreciate you asking, it says how professional wrestling used to be. I can show them how you wind up. I'm lying prone on the sofa with heating pads on my knees.
Oh, dude.
But they are. They are. They get better every day. It's just, you know, it's just a traumatic thing, what they do. And they say it takes, you know, 6 months. I have no more pain, just discomfort, that's all. You know, I'm pain-free,
yeah.
Thank God.
Have you gone back to work?
Oh, yeah. I've been back 2 weeks.
Good.
They said that I'd be out 8 weeks, and I was out 5 weeks.
Good.
So,
I want to share something with you I read today.
Go ahead.
You know, my wife constantly makes fun of me because I won't swim in the ocean. You know, those things in there will eat you. There was a story in the Atlanta paper today. The University of Florida has got some program that's funded by somebody that where they are catching these great white sharks and they're tagging them so they can follow them, know where they're at.
Go ahead.
They got two up off of Cape Cod up there, you know, where they filmed Jaws.
Right.
They were spotted yesterday by this, however they follow them, off the coast of Savannah.
That is correct.
They are, say, they're between Savannah and Charleston, around in that area there. They said that one of them is named Jeannie and one of them is named Mary Lee. They said Mary Lee is 22 feet long and weighs 3,500 pounds. And they said her counterpart, Jeannie, is 22 feet long and weighs 1,500 pounds. That's 5,700 pounds of great white shark.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Mary Lee gets me, she's going to have to come up on the beach to do it.
You ain't lying, buddy. I
was out there today.
If I hear that music, you know, that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, yeah. I ain't even going nowhere near Savannah.
Well, let me tell you, it wasn't cold, but it was cool, and when that wind blows and you're on the beach, it's kind of cold.
Oh, yeah.
There were people out there windsurfing today. There were people out there kite surfing and people on paddle boards. I shake my head when I ride by them.
Have you ever? We went to this is a few years ago. We went to SeaWorld there in Orlando, and we went to the shark exhibit there. And one of the things they do is they show you, you know, sharks. Basically, they eat the, you know, they're not man eaters per se, but they eat what's injured or. You know, they're the garbage collectors of the ocean.
Right.
And basically they said that, you know, God in his infinite wisdom created these animals so that you don't have, you know, dead animals floating around. The sharks will eat them. But they also go after seals. and they showed from underneath the ocean, or, you know, they had a camera down there looking up. They showed a guy laying on a surfboard paddling with his hands and his feet out. And then they showed a seal swimming, and I'll be darned if it don't look like exactly the same thing.
They're identical.
Yeah, and then they said, you know, the shark don't know no better, you know. I told my boss I was reading that today, and he heard me laughing about it. And I said, yeah, they'd see me in the water and holler buffet. I said, you know.
Now, they didn't show one getting anybody patrolling the beach on an Arctic cat, did they?
No, sir. No, sir. I'm thoroughly convinced if they walk up on the beach, I'm going to wear them out.
Well, it's their house. You know what I mean? That's
yeah,
their
I mean,
house.
I ain't going in there and mess with them.
I'm not either. Man, they got no...
I like to look at the go to the beach and look at the water, but I'm like Bobby, I don't want to get in.
I don't
know. I was scared of that as a young boy tangling with a jellyfish. That was enough for me.
Oh geez.
I lost that. That was the first job I ever did. I jobbed to a jellyfish when I was about 8 years old.
Wait, have you ever I had never heard of this, not this past summer, but summer before last. It was so hot that these creatures come up from South Florida. They were called Portuguese man-o-wars.
Yeah.
I've never heard of one. Have you ever heard of them?
I've heard of them. Them some bad boys, too.
Well, you ought to see one of the guys. He's a dispatcher. He was out there on the surfboard just resting with his arm in the water, and it looked like 100 hot wires got on his arm.
Ooh.
Oh, man, it was. It's a burn. And there was a couple of them had washed up on the beach, and they're nasty looking, I'm telling you, man. And that's just stuff that you hear about. What's out there you don't know about?
Oh, please. I ain't going out there and finding out, I'll be honest.
I'm not either, Bobby. I'll take their word for it.
Yeah, they can laugh at me if they want to.
And then, you know...
I don't mind going out on a boat like I did when I went whale watching, but I'm not dipping my feet in there or anything.
Well, I can sign you two up to where you can go diving with the sharks. You've seen that. Have you ever seen
that? You know,
that's
always been one of the things I wanted to do. I've always wanted to do that. I don't know.
I had.
You got to be some sort of nut.
That's right above fair shooting, right?
Yes, exactly.
Now, I have sort of had an inclination that I would think I would like to swim with Flipper.
That'd be about the extent of it.
You know, but I don't care nothing about, no, we ain't. It'd have to be a controlled environment.
Yeah, like in a swimming pool.
Yeah, yeah, or an aquarium downtown or something. Yeah, I'm not.
Have you been to that thing, Bobby?
No. No.
I heard it's awesome.
I do too. I have too, but you know, there's only so many things a fish can do, and what they charge to get in down there. It's
snug, isn't it?
It's high dollar.
Well, if I owned it, I'd get a call in the middle of the night and tell me that glass broke and I got fish all down there on Peachtree and everywhere.
Oh geez. Yeah. Well. Oh,
sharks. I can't imagine what it costs to operate something like that.
Oh, I can't imagine. Me neither. I mean, they have to keep...
I've never touched that one, but I've been to the one in Chattanooga, and I enjoy it.
They have to keep, you know, they have to pay veterinarians or, you know, I mean,
oh,
they have to keep people down there all the time. It's just, cost has got to be astronomical.
Oh, it has to be. Pumping that water and circulating
that
water.
Yeah, just to maintain the water would be a high dollar.
Oh, I'll stick with the elephants.
Did y'all hear that? Up in Greg Brown was telling me he was up in Chattanooga. He went down in those caverns. I wouldn't do that.
Where are the caverns?
Yeah, some kind of caverns or something. Is it in Chattanooga?
Too many creepy crawlers around in there too.
Yeah, my wife convinced me to go to Ruby Falls one time. And I got down there, and I walked all the way down into the bottom of that thing. And when I got down there, it was like somebody peeing off a rock. And I said, this is it?
I ain't going down there.
Ooh, see Ruby Falls. Oh, man. Well, ask executed with your operation, did they give you an oil can like the Tin Woodsman and Wizard of Oz has, so you can hold your knees up when they, his titanium starts to rust a little bit?
I can use a grease gun.
Put a grease gun on the back of your leg. That's good.
Well, what was that stuff that Steinborn used to talk about that the old timers used to use, that the Missouri Mauler used, horse liniment or something like that?
Oh, DMSO.
I guess, yeah.
Well, DMSO, and I seen guys use that at Absorbine Senior. That was a horse liniment. You buy it, you have to find it at them old time drugstores or at a feed and seed. Oh yeah, you gotta be careful. That stuff will burn you up.
Oh man, well, how are the Falcons doing, Bobby? What's their? They lost another one, didn't they?
They're doing all right. They're just 12-2 this year.
Yeah.
they beat the Giants like Sunday, 34-0. I'm not real sure what I watched.
Yeah.
I mean, I sat there and watched it, and I couldn't believe it.
And the Saints beat Tampa Bay. Well, it was like 40-0.
They beat them 41-0, and the week before the Giants beat them 53-5 or 10 or something.
But you see, though the Falcons have that record, really nobody's dominating. You know, I mean, look at Seattle, what they're doing. Look at San Francisco. I mean,
and they play each other this week.
I know. I wouldn't bet on that.
Me neither.
Well, do you have any games left to go to, Bobby?
Got one on the last home game in regular season is December the 30th, Tampa Bay.
Well, how does it work, Bobby, if you're a season holder when it comes to playoffs? How does that work?
They sent me an invoice the 1st of December, and I paid for it online. And as a season ticket holder, I can pay as they go. I bought the first game, which will be the divisional playoff game. If they win Saturday night, they play Detroit Saturday night. If they beat them, they have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. As long as they win, they play at home. And they'll get a bye the first week. So I paid for the first game, and if they win the first game, then that Monday they'll charge my credit card again for the NFC Championship game, which will be the following Sunday or Saturday, whichever day they decide to play it on. And then if we're fortunate enough to go to the Super Bowl, if I get picked to do that, I'll get a letter from them telling me how much they are.
Now, Bobby, if they get by the first round, I mean, who would they play? I mean, what team?
Don't know yet.
Like
if
maybe
they
who?
If they win Saturday where they got the home field advantage, the wild card games will be the first weekend of January.
Okay.
So we would play whoever the lowest seed winner is. However that would work out. If, let's say, just pulling two names out of a hat, let's say Seattle played Cincinnati, and Cincinnati's a 3 seed and Seattle's a 4 seed. Well, if whichever one wins, we'd get the lowest seed. And even in the other game, however it works out, we get the lowest seed. So you won't know who it is until they play.
Okay.
So we just have to sit and wait.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all got any rooms for rent, Michael?
Sure. There's always something.
I may need a couch or something.
On the way to New Orleans.
To go to New Orleans if we get that far.
Would you go?
We'll figure something out.
Jerry, in 1999, when they played Denver and Miami in the Super Bowl, I went. I've always wanted to go to Super Bowl. I'd never been. I was fortunate enough to get tickets. The face value of the tickets was $3.25 that year. So I paid $325 for a ticket. I left on Saturday morning. I drove from here to my brother's house, he lived in New Smyrna Beach, just south of Daytona. I spent the night with him, got up early Sunday morning, and drove the last 200 to Miami. Went straight to the stadium, went to the game. When the game was over, I got in my car, drove from Miami to Orlando,
checked in a Holiday Inn there right by Disney World, slept about 5 hours, and then got up and drove home. I was back home Monday evening. 1,800 miles, 3 days, and was very disappointed. Not only did we lose, but the Super Bowl is for rich folks. It ain't for people like me.
Would you go to New Orleans?
The guy that goes to the games with me, he's never been. He said something about it. It would all depend on how much the tickets are. I just here's the thing that's amazing, and you know, like I say, I'm a football fan, and I just wanted to say I'd been to a Super Bowl. When you get Super Bowl tickets, they won't take a check. You have to go pay cash.
You kidding?
Well, you go down to the stadium and you pay cash because the turnaround is so quick. If the check bounced, they wouldn't have any recourse on you other than to sue you. They couldn't, you know, it'd be too late.
Right.
The tickets already be used. So I went down there. I took them $650, picked up two tickets. I turned around, and there was a guy standing there in a three-piece suit. And I kind of thought he was probably some kind of security, you know, for the Falcons or something. But when I turned around, he said, hey, he said, would you like to sell those? And I said, no, sir. I said, I want to go to the game. I've never been. And he said, well, I don't blame you. I'd go, too, if I had them. And I said, if I did want to sell them, I said, how much would you give me for them? He said, I'll give you $1,800 a piece cash right now.
I said, let me see if I can get round you up some more.
Well, see, that was, you know, I mean, I wanted to go, so I didn't sell them. So me and Debbie's talked about it. That may be an option, too, is if somebody's that wanting to go that bad, I might be able to help them.
At a price. So what would one be now if you went? No
idea.
Well,
like I say, in 99, they were 3.25, so I have no clue what they are now.
Ooh. That'd be pretty snug, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's probably. And the thing about it is, you go to one, and you get there, and they're more concerned with who's singing the national anthem, who's performing before the game,
right,
who's the halftime show. And when you're in the stadium, everything is geared for TV.
Oh, absolutely.
So when you're in the stadium, the only way you can even enjoy or know what's going on is to watch the scoreboard or the Jumbotron.
Right.
You can't watch going on the field because it looks like a fire drill. The year I went, KISS was the pregame entertainment. Cher sang the national anthem. The halftime show was Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, Gloria Estevan, and Stevie Wonder.
Well, you got your money's worth right there.
Yeah, and then the pregame was, or the after the game, it was KC and the Sunshine Band. But after we lost, I saw KC sing a half a song as I was going out the gate.
Boy.
Programs were $20 a piece. Hats, just regular baseball hats that says I was at the Super Bowl or Super Bowl something or another on it, they were $50 a piece.
We're in the wrong business.
The winner's hat after the game was over, you know, they got them done. They're selling them when you go out. You know, they had the Denver Broncos world champions. You know, blah blah blah. They were $75 a piece.
You can burn up some money down there, couldn't you?
Only thing I bought when I went down there, I bought three programs. I bought one for me and one for each of my kids, and I don't know what they did with theirs, if they still got them or not, but I'm looking at mine. It's in a little curio cabinet here in my living room. But that's all I bought.
I wonder what they did with the Falcons World.
I imagine they burned them.
Church.
I imagine they burned them. I don't know what else they could have done with them.
Maybe they took them to Kansas City and sold them for $1 a piece.
Yeah.
I could have got rid of them for them.
Hey, let me tell you what Charlie Smith did when the Braves won the World Championship here in Atlanta. He had a bunch of hats that said World Series Champions on them. And, of course, you didn't know who was going to win. You didn't know if it was going to be the Braves or I think they played the Indians the year they finally won it. He borrowed one of them irons like they use at a sporting goods shop.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the Braves won, he was outside the parking lot with a generator, had that thing fired up, and was pressing A's on them hats and was selling them fast as he could hand them out.
I bet he was.
they ain't nothing slack about him when it comes to turning the dollar.
No, sir.
Well, anyway, since this is going to be the last show that we do this season, listen to me, I'm talking circus talk already. This year, I figured we'd do our annual memorial show, and I always hate doing this show because not only because of the number of people that we lose, but I always think when we do the show, that's it, we won't lose anymore, and it never fails. We always lose a couple more between now and the end of the year, but I'm hoping not. And I've put together the list today of guys, and this is just guys from our era, from, say, the 50s through the early 80s, and that we lost. And there's 55 names on the list. That's not including there was probably 25, 30 people who were more current or, you know, in the 90s, 2000s, and even still active that we've lost. So this has been a tough year. But I wanted to start because I told Jerry when he called me earlier today, I just found out and just confirmed yesterday that Gordon Nelson passed away.
Oh, geez.
This past Monday. Jerry, I know Jerry worked with him in the Carolinas. Bobby, were you ever around him?
Yeah, so he came through Georgia a couple of times. He never stayed here long, but he passed through a couple of times. I had a chance to referee a couple of matches for him.
But he was, I know he was in Georgia for a fairly decent run in the 60s under Mask as the Outlaw.
Yeah.
And then the funny thing is he was actually from Winnipeg, but he spent the first 15 years of his career in England. So a lot of people assumed he was from England, but he wasn't. He was actually from Winnipeg. And Jerry and I were talking. We were both surprised at who he was. He was 82 years old. Died of complication of pneumonia and heart failure.
Jeez.
But he was a good wrestler. He was very good, very underrated. Of course, he worked a lot of mask gimmicks. I saw the most of him. He was in Mobile. Came in late 75 and was here through probably May or June of 76, working as the wrestling pro number two. He started out teaming with Baxter, and they were tag team champions here for a while, and then Baxter kind of slacked off and was working more on the Dothan end, and Gordon was working over here as the pro number two, and you know, mainly doing single work here, but he was a good worker, I tell you. Smooth as silk. Did you ever wrestling, Jerry?
Oh, yeah, many times up in the Carolinas. Him and Jeff Ports were tagged up there.
Yeah, they were Mr. X 1 and 2, right?
Right. And he was always
what was
in
he
shape,
like?
You know, took care of himself. I guess he must have. He lived to be 82.
Have I got the right guy in mind? Was he the one that did the little deal where he would spin around and slap the guy, and he would hit his own leg with his hand, but he did it so dang fast it sounded like he was smacking somebody's head off?
I don't know if Gordy did that or not.
Something's making me think he did, but I don't know.
Yeah, I always thought he was from England, too.
No, he was from Winnipeg. But he started his career. I mean, he never even worked in the States or in Canada even to begin. He went over there and started with the Dale Mann promotion in England and worked there for 15 years before he ever came back to the North America. Of course, he was married to Marie Laverne, who was Ann Laverne's daughter. And so, but I didn't find out until I was reading a thing on all this that I always thought Pancho Villa was her father, Bobby Pico, but he was actually her stepfather. Billy Wolf was her biological father, Marie's biological father. He's probably got all kind of children running around.
There's no telling.
But Yeah, I was surprised about that with Gordon. His age threw me on that. But just going through this list, like I said, I've got 55 names here, so we'll try and get through all of them. I'm sure, as you guys remember them, if you think about, you know, if these are guys you work with or remember stuff about, just stop me and, you know, tell me what you remember about them. But I'll just start with the list. Savannah Jack, his real name was Ted Russell. He was after my time. I know, Jerry, I think you may have still been around. He worked mainly for Watts down in Louisiana in the late 80s, maybe the early 90s. He was kind of what Watts was trying to replace the Junkyard Dog with when Ritter went to work for Vince.
I didn't know.
The original guy named by the name of Ralph Bartleman, who worked mainly in the Midwest, Chicago, was a fairly big star when Chicago wrestling was on the network, you know, Dumont Network. Rick O'Toole, who was a Detroit, Columbus, Ohio guy, also worked on the name of Rick Lancaster. Jim Lancaster, who was on the show with us back, I guess, last year. Rick
right.
teamed with him quite a bit. Bob Adams, I found nothing about this guy other than the fact he worked something, you know, for about 6-7 years during the 70s. Bulldog Cliff Lilly, who was Ted Allen's original partner in the Nightmares, if I'm not mistaken. I know he was, or maybe he replaced Ted. I don't remember how that worked, but he was a Nightmare somewhere along the line.
I think Ted's original partner was Danny D's.
Danny Davis?
Danny Davis.
Okay.
I think that was the original team.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got it totally mixed. Cliff Lilly was one of the Dominoes with Frank Hester. And then he left, and Pepe Lopez took his place. And, of course, both of them were killed in the car wreck in 76. Yeah, Cliff Lilly was one of the Dominoes, not one of the Nightmares. Don Joyce was actually professional football player that wrestled in the offseason in the 50s. I don't know if either one of you have ever heard of him.
No, never heard of him.
Woody Farmer. You knew him, didn't you, Jerry?
No, but Dickie trained him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In San Francisco.
He was from California. Doug Furness, of course, we knew from Tennessee.
What happened to Doug?
He died during the reunion this year, didn't he, Bobby? I think so.
Bo may be listening. Me and him's talked about Doug Furness. He may know more than give a little insight on that, but
you don't know the cause of death on him.
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
Paul Figueroa, who was a longtime TV job guy, preliminary guy up in New York during the Capitol days in the 60s, all the way up through the early days of the WWF. Of course, our friend Tommy Weathers, who was another one we lost close to the reunion time when he was around sometime in March, wasn't it, Bobby?
It was after the reunion. I had the privilege of doing his memorial service. He was a Tommy soaking wet probably weighed 100 pounds, maybe. I mean, he wasn't nothing but skin and bone. And we did a deal on Atlanta TV where somebody took Wrestling 2's mask off. Can't remember who it was. And he dove to the apron and pulled it over his face, and Tommy took his shirt off. And I gave it to 2 to put over his head to get him out of there. And I can remember the rib was we went back in the dressing room and told him we'd been banned from the air because he had buried his body on TV. I mean, he was white as a ghost. And they were, seriously, you count his ribs. Oh, he was funny.
Well, speaking of Bo, Bo's just calling me. Let me get Bo on the line with us. Bo, you there?
I'm here. How's everybody doing?
doing great. Doing great.
Doug passed away from Parkinson's disease.
Is that what it was?
The last few years he was alive, it just really ate him up.
Oh, jeez.
He had moved out somewhere out in the Southwest. I can't exactly remember where he was at. He was in San Diego for a while, and he'd moved somewhere out in the desert because the climate would help his health problems. He was down to, I'd heard he was down to like 160 pounds.
Wow. Because he was not a small guy.
At one time when he was working here in Knoxville, I remember seeing him measure his thighs, and they were 38 inches around.
Boy.
There was a reason he had that world record for the squat.
And he also played for the University of Tennessee, didn't he?
Yeah, sure did. He played. He played up until he missed, I think, his senior year or his junior year. One of the years he missed because somebody ran a red light and hit him in a car. And he missed one of the last two seasons, which really kept him from going to the NFL.
Huh. Of course, you knew Tommy Weathers, a guy we were just talking about.
Yeah, I knew Tommy Weathers when I was a kid, and he was working here. I was putting a ring up. He was reffing for Fuller's.
Now, if you had one of those scales, and we've all seen the scales of justice with the two pans, you put Charlie Smith in one and Tommy Weathers in the other, which one do you think would tilt it more?
You talking 40 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, it'd balance out. It wouldn't move. They were both so little they had one stripe in their pajamas.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. I was working for Fuller when they did the deal with Tommy, where they decided to turn him heel. He was refereeing a match with Bob and Brad Armstrong against Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, and it was a handcuff match where the guy that was not in the ring was handcuffed to the top rope. And Tommy had midway of the match, Brad tagged Bob, and Tommy just stood there and waved the key in front of him, and I thought the roof was going to come off that place. I'm surprised that he didn't get killed that night. So they turned him heel, and they had him managing Randy and Dennis, and it went about as far as Charlie's managerial career went. He froze up in front of the camera and everything, and just didn't do it well.
He managed Kevin Sullivan and Bobby Eaton here in Knoxville for a little bit for Blackjack.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe 4 or 5 months. It wasn't real long.
Owen came up with a brilliant idea to make Charlie Smith a manager. He said, man, all that smart aleck and talk you do, he said, you'd be a great manager. He said, but you can't referee no more if you manage. And Charlie goes, well, okay. So they Butch Malone and Jim Dalton were working, I think they were under, no, they wasn't under Hood. They were just working as a team. And they told Charlie they were going to start him on Mr. Ward's end. So they got him at TV to do interviews for Albany. And as soon as they said action and the camera came on, Charlie shut up, couldn't talk, froze up, couldn't say a word. I mean, Gordon or whoever's doing the interviews or Carlisle, they'd try to lead him into something. He wouldn't say nothing. He'd just look at him. So his managerial career lasted about one interview session. And then, they said, well, you screwed up now. You can't referee. And of course, that lasted until the first time I needed a referee, and then he was back refereeing again. But, when he did his shoot interview with Scott Teal, I was laying on the bed about 2 foot from him, prodding him, telling him what to say, because he gets in front of a camera, he shuts up. That's why all of us that ride with him a lot carry cameras with us.
Oh, man. Well, Bo, you said you had something to mention from our show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I tried to call in a couple of weeks ago before the Nyquil knocked you out, but I didn't get in, and it was, we didn't have the program last week. But you, when y'all were talking about Christmas night wrestling, this kind of goes along with what you're talking about tonight, too. But you were talking about the Christmas night and Mike Boyette, and I come across something I got thinking about. I got a poster in here from Mobile. Christmas Night Wrestling Special, 1971. All seats $1, including ringside, while they last.
Yep.
Oh, let me read this card to you. See if it's 18 wrestlers in action. Which that's that time period was a really overloaded card.
Yeah.
Opening match: Tom Bradley and Vic Sanchez. Next match: Greg Peterson and Pedro Colombo. Then you had Joe Gagne, who was John Gagne, who I was not familiar with. Versus Fred Willis. The original Blue Yankee against Bill Sky.
Yep.
Rocket Monroe against Joe Turner.
Yep.
Wonder Boy Bobby Shane against Cowboy Bob Kelly. And they came back with two main events on top, Prince Pulis and Eddie Sullivan against Frank Dalton and John Gagne. And in the main event, the Fabulous Fargos and Bobby Shane against Cowboy Bob Kelly, Hippie Boyette, and the Wrestling Pro.
Now, there's a story behind that. That all seats a dollar. And that all seats for a dollar caused a no-show on that. Caused that whole card to get changed around.
Really?
I was there that night. After Lee started advertising that, Bobby Shane held him up. He wanted a bigger percentage of the gate. He wanted 10% of the gate. So Lee said, okay, you can have 10% of the gate. Made all seats a dollar. So Bobby Shane promptly no-showed. Prince Pullins no-showed. So Mike Boyette had a broken leg. So he was there, but he was on crutches. The main event turned out to be Kelly, Bobby Fields, and the Pro against the Fargos and Eddie Sullivan. Joe and Bill were both there, but they didn't work. Joe worked babyface, and Bill worked heel, I think, or maybe the other way around. But anyway, that whole card got screwed up because of those two no-shows. And John Gagne was a guy from, I want to say he was from Montreal. He worked under a whole lot of different names. He worked as John Gagne, Jim Gagne, Jean Gagne, Jean-Jacques Gagne. I don't think he had a big career there. He worked at Mobile for a couple of weeks, and then most of his career he was either in Eastern Canada or he worked for McGurk for a while.
He could have had a career. He didn't even know who he was. Yeah, I heard that.
He also worked in England. He was fairly well known in England and Europe. But I think he was from Montreal. Now, whether or not he was related to Frenchie Martin, whose real name was Gagne as well, I don't know if they were related or not. But John was he was short. He maybe weighed about 215, 220 pounds, had a good build on him. He looked like a miniature version of Don Morocco, basically what he looked like. If you go to my website, I've got a picture of him up on there.
I'll go check him out. So did it sell the house out?
No. It was in the auditorium, which held 10,000. There might have been 6,000-7,000 there. So Shane would have gotten more, you know. Anyway, had he not tried to hold up the thing, because he was getting a percentage of the gate anyway, if he'd left the tickets at $2 or $3 or whatever it was, he'd have gotten more than. But when he found out that Lee did that every seat for a dollar, he just decided not to show up.
Well, some things in wrestling have not changed.
I'm sitting here listening to that card. I'm glad I didn't have to referee that Joe Turner Rocket Monroe match. I've officiated easier street fights than that.
Well, see, no, then Joe did work babyface because Rocket was a heel here at that time. Who did you say Bill worked with?
The Blue Yankee.
Smitty, yeah, okay.
Would that have been Smitty?
Huh?
Was that Curtis Smith or is that too early?
That was Curtis Smith.
Was it?
Okay.
Yes, that was Curtis. Curtis had been gone. He was in as the Blue Yankee. He and Spears were in as a tag team because the Yankees in 69 and 70. They got unmasked in 71. Then Smitty was gone, came back for that Christmas show, was gone again, and then came back in April, May of 72 as the Spoiler. Same built-up shoe, same mask, same everything. The whole gimmick was people, they wanted people to know who he was, but he kept denying he was the Blue Yankee. So, but anyway. But you ought to donate that poster to the reunion.
Yeah, it's a copy. It's a real good copy. I was thinking about that because I don't even remember who. People come up and give me stuff all the time now, so I don't even know where I got this thing. I just happened to remember a couple of weeks ago when y'all were talking that I had it in here in my filing cabinet.
Well, I'll have to dig out the results I've got because I've got the results of that card. I'll have to dig them out and I'll email you what the actual card turned out to be. Yeah, but Boyette had broken his leg during a TV match. Boyette had more problems. He broke his leg probably a half a dozen times over his lifetime.
Wow.
But he'd broken his leg, and that was a shoot. He'd actually legitimately broken his leg. And he was there. He was on crutches, and he was managing Kelly and Bobby Fields. And I'm almost positive that third partner was the Pro.
Yeah, that's cool.
The whole thing ended up, he threw his crutches into him, and the baby faces beat the Fargos. And
now, was that up in Jackie Fargo?
No. That was Don Fargo and Greg Valentine. Greg Valentine
okay.
was working as Johnny Fargo.
Yeah, talk about another easier street fight. I went through the windshield of a car one time, and it was easier than working with Greg Valentine.
Oh, jeez.
Well, you had, think of who you had in there. You had Eddie Sullivan. Eddie was a fairly light worker. Eddie was a good worker. I don't know if any of you guys ever worked with Eddie, but Eddie was a good worker. Then you had Don Fargo, who just loved for people to beat on him. You had Greg Valentine. You had Kelly, who loved for people to beat on him and loved to beat on people. And you had Bobby Fields, who was a Welch. And you had Baxter. There was probably enough taters thrown during that match to fill up an Idaho farm.
You think there was any blood in that match?
Renesto told me, he says, "You're not part of the show unless I tell you you are. Stay out of the way." And I went, "Yes, sir." That'd have been one of them.
Hey, Michael, how many guys normally worked in there at a time?
Generally, they carried 8 to 12 people. Now, regulars for that. Now, who out of that list that you named, who were regulars in here at the time was Kelly, Boyette, the Fargos were here. Shane was working in Florida, so they brought him in. Pullins was here. He had made a heel turn, and he was getting a real good push. He decided to go back and do jobs for Bruiser instead of stay down here. So I don't know what the story was behind that. Frank Dalton was a regular. Rocket was not a regular at that time. He must have been either in Florida or Georgia and come in for that. Neither Joe or Bill were working here at that time. I think they were either in the Carolinas on their way to Georgia or Tennessee on their way to Georgia when they came through here.
Yeah, they came into Atlanta in 71.
Okay, so they were already in Georgia.
Yeah, they were here late 71, early 72.
Okay, so they were either on their way to Georgia or home for the holidays or something. Let's just ask Joe. He's on the line. Let's get him on the line real quick. Say that. or doesn't want to act right. Joe, you with us?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you hear that card that Bo just ran off from Mobile?
Yeah, I heard it.
That Christmas card?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember it, though.
That's because Rocket hit you too hard.
I was going to say, you probably still ain't over the concussion.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. There's a lot of that magic I don't remember. Like I told
you. He was involving the Oates brothers and Rocket Monroe, huh?
Well, remind me, because some of them I tried to forget. But when I get up in the mornings, my back's killing me. I can remember some of them. So.
But to answer your question, Bo, there was probably about 10 guys here total. If I remember correctly, the referee for that main event, Bobby, you were talking about staying out of the way, was either Lynn Sasser or it might have been Ricky Gibson. Because Gibson wasn't wrestling then. He was refereeing. And I don't remember, or it may have been Joe Powell. I think Joe Powell was here at that time, too. So.
What year did Ricky Gibson start working?
He started working, they sent him, he refereed here in 70, started late 70, early 71. They sent him up to Bill Golden to actually start wrestling sometime in 71. Then he came back here. And was doing a combination wrestling. I think he had his first match late 71, early 72. But they did a thing with him where he was Kelly's protege, and they did a deal with Gorgeous George and Frenchie were here, and Gibson was still kind of refereeing some, wrestling some. And that's how they worked him into full time. They worked a deal out where Kelly and Gibson wrestled George and Frenchie. And Gibson pretty much went off there. But he wrestled in other territories before he started up here. He wrestled up Montgomery, I know. I think he had his first matches up for Bill Golden.
He came to Tennessee in 74.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had he'd been working through 2 or 3 years by that time.
Yeah, that's why I wondered how long he'd been working. Man, he got over big here.
He was around the business from the time he was a kid. Him and Jimmy Golden, when Lee had Louisiana, Bill Golden was the main booker down there. And Ricky's dad worked down there and drove the ring truck. So Ricky and Jimmy Golden were close friends, and they would go put out, you know, poster towns and stuff like that, and help around the office and help around the arena or whatever, put up the ring or whatever. So he had been around the business since he was a kid, just like Jimmy Golden.
Yeah, isn't it something about how so many started that way?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, I'm glad that you guys are on with us. You can probably remember some of the names on our list, too. We were talking about Tommy Weathers. The next name on the list is another referee, Dick Worley. Did he ever travel, Bobby, or was he strictly New York?
I never met him. I never knew him to be anywhere but New York.
He was buddies with Handsome Jimmy. And it seems to me, like Jimmy said, he always had a regular full-time job there in New York or New Jersey, wherever he was from. And he really didn't get outside of northern New Jersey, New York, and parts of Pennsylvania.
He was a good referee, though, from what I've seen of him.
Yeah.
Much better than some of the referees that they had back in those days. Oh, man. Some of those guys were. I was watching a Madison Square Garden show from 73 last night, DVD of it, and some of those referees, I don't know how they even got in the ring without their walkers and their canes. But they were. In Madison Square Garden, if I'm not mistaken, they had to use actual New York people from the New York Athletic Commission. And I'm assuming they smartened them up, but they actually worked for the commission, because they were boxing and wrestling referees. But but that was that's not a city I would have wanted to have to deal with all the rules and regulations to run a promotion in New York. It's bad enough of what we have to go through with the circus. I can imagine what wrestling had to do, especially in the Garden, because they couldn't have managers at ringside. They could have masked wrestlers, but their face couldn't be covered. So what sense is a masked wrestler? And the thing is, they still had them, because both two of these discs I have, El Olympico, Joey Correa is on there, and he's wearing what basically looks like an aviator helmet with an open face, but it covers his ears and the back of his head. What in the world is that? But they had so many rules and regulations in New York, especially Madison Square Garden. So, I don't know. They didn't allow women for many years. So, strange thing. All right, the next name on our list, and this is a guy from, I want to say he was up around your way, Bo, but Joe, I'm pretty sure you knew him, Joe McCarthy, Al Criswell.
Joe McCarthy, yeah. He wrestled.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
he's a tough old boy, too. Very tough guy. I wasn't around him much. Bill's a lot older than I am. You know how he is.
Okay, next is Joe Blanchard and his wife Jackie. They both passed away this year, so Dully's had a rough year. Jerry, did you work with Joe Blanchard any?
I worked for him.
When you were out in Texas?
Yeah.
Did you ever see him work as a wrestler?
I've seen tapes of him.
He was very good.
He had a real bad limp when I met him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know if it's his hip or his knee. But I never worked with.
Next name on the list is Bob Finnegan, who was the ring announcer commentator for the Sheik. He worked Detroit, Toledo, Columbus, Ohio, places like that. And of course, we all knew Chief J. Strongbow, Joe Scarpa.
And you bringing up some guys' names. They didn't even have pencil and paper back when they was working, did they?
Well, what we're doing, Joe, is we're going through, we're doing a memorial thing for all the guys that we lost this year from the business.
Oh, okay. I tuned in late. I didn't know what was going on.
Benny Mendables, who was Arizona. I don't think he ever worked anywhere but around Phoenix and stuff. In fact, there were quite a few guys from that Arizona area that we lost this year. Benny Mendables was one. Eddie Lopez, Lumberjack Russell Waters. I'm sure these names don't mean anything to you guys because they, like I said, they mainly worked out there in Arizona. John Ringer was another one. We mentioned this guy when he passed away. Bobby, you knew him, Buddy Diamond.
Yeah.
Wasn't he an Atlanta cop? His
name was Charles Medford. He was a City of Atlanta policeman. Became good friends with Rocky Johnson. And I'm not sure Rocky trained him, but Rocky kind of led him in the right direction to wherever he wound up. But yeah, I refereed a couple of his matches. He was. I'm sure he got better as time went on, or I hope he did. But he was all right. I never had no problem with him. But yeah, he was a City of Atlanta policeman. He used to work the matches, and that's how he met Rocky.
Now, Bo, do you remember he was one of the many times he was
in and out of here for Nick several times. I've got a lot of clippings and newspaper clippings and posters and stuff that he's on. I really don't remember anything about him.
When Lawler was doing that gimmick where he was wearing an army uniform.
He was Lawler's private, yeah.
Yeah, private Diamond.
Yeah, that's really the only thing I'd ever seen of him, just a couple of matches from Memphis.
fellow from from Eastern Canada, Dale Skinner. I don't think he worked anywhere but there. The guy that was actually on our show just a few weeks before he passed away, Gorgeous George Jr. What a great guy he was. What a great guy he was. I'm so glad I got him to do the show. That was one of our better shows.
One time in Mississippi, Junior go run into the ring. So he kept his street clothes on, put some sunglasses on, and a cap where so that they wouldn't nobody recognize him going to the ring. And just as he went to get up on the ring, the policeman didn't know who it was. He pulled out a slapjack, hit him hard as good over the head. It stunned him, and he just turned around and looked at him. That policeman, well, his hat was off in. He knew who it was. He said, because he come back dressed, and the policeman says, God, that scared the hell out of me. I didn't even faze that man.
Michael, you ever seen the clip from Knoxville with Gorgeous George and the Stomper where they hit Joe LaDuke in the head with a sledgehammer?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, I have. They did that down here. You know, they did that in Knoxville, and then they came down here. I remember the first time I ever saw Archie. And I was a grown man, and I had a few matches, and he still scared me. He came in here in 1979 or 80. I can't remember what it was. He'd been the lead heel up there in Knoxville. They brought him down here to work a program with he wound up working a program with Joe LaDuke. But gee, there was a guy that I did. I met later on. I didn't know who he was at the time this happened, but I met him later on. He was one of Jackson's buddies that worked all those outlaws up around Birmingham. You remember a guy by the name of Ronnie Horn? Oh,
seems like I remember his name, but
well, they brought him in here and had him do a job for Archie. They had the first time they brought Archie in, they were doing a big show in the big auditorium and. They brought Archie in, and Ronnie was his opponent. Well, he never even got his warm-up jacket off. Archie just tore into him, ripped his warm-up jacket up. In fact, that upset Ronnie more than anything. He didn't mind doing the job because he knew he was going to have to do that, but it cost him a $35 warm-up jacket. And that was, of course, I'd seen George growing up here in Mobile his time in here because he was in and out of here from 72 to 77 and was a big part of this promotion down here, but he was something else, I tell you.
They had a long run here in East Tennessee together, about 2.5 years.
Well, they had I don't know if he told the story on our show or I'd read it somewhere, some interview he did. They had him in, I don't know if it was Nashville for Gulas, or it was in Memphis with Jared. They had him managing Boyette and Frankie Lane. And somehow or another, whoever it was he was working for, he'd upset them, and they were going to have Boyette and Lane beat him up, so he just left the territory. I think that's when he went to Knoxville and went to work for Fuller. But and then, of course, he was in Georgia in the early 80s. He was managing, who was it, Bobby Toru Tanaka and Killer Khan or somebody like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he had Khan, he had Tanaka, and he managed, I don't know, Carson had Archie when he was here.
Yeah.
Well, one of the funniest stories I ever heard about George, Jody Hamilton told me the story, and then I had George. I asked him about it when he came to Mobile that year, and we sat there and talked, and he told me his side of the story. But they were in Arizona working, and they were riding together in Jody's 98, and it was a convertible. And somewhere along the road there going to one of the towns, Jody had told George that there was an old log out there, and it was full of rattlesnakes, and if you went out there and kicked that log, you could hear them. So George gets out of the car and walks up there, and he's going to kick that board. Well, he's being a little apprehensive like anybody would if he thought it was full of rattlesnakes, and he's bent over looking at it before he kicks it. Well, while he's bent over looking, Jody reached in the glove compartment and got a pack of cigarettes and stood up in that convertible 98 or whatever they was in and threw them cigarettes and hit George in the butt and hollered, "Snake!" And when he did, George just jumped over that log. Well, what Joey didn't know and George didn't know, there was a 40-foot drop on the other side of that log. And they said it took him about 30 minutes to climb back up. Said it tore his clothes up. Said it just skinned him up. Said it looked like he'd been run over by a truck. You know, just, but he said he got even with him not too long after that. They were going somewhere else, and there was a snake curled up in the middle of the road. And Jody stopped and had the bright lights on looking at it, and he told George, he said, "Reach in the glove box and get my gun out." And he said, "Just stick the gun out there and shoot it." Well, rather than standing up and pointing the gun, George just held the gun out and pointed it toward the snake like he's going to shoot it and blowed the whole right front quarter panel off Jody's car.
You can't have fun like that anymore.
No, you can't. You just can't be live entertainment.
Oh.
Well, the next name on our list, I know Mr. Oates had the pleasure of working with him, if I'm not mistaken, Hans Schmidt.
Yes, I did.
And it was a pleasure.
Pleasure was not the right word, was it?
Maybe that's why I'm laying here with these heating pads on my new knees.
Oh, man. Here's a name that you guys may not have ever heard of, but his brother was very well known. But this guy actually got in the business before his brother, Laddie Hollick, or Hollick. His brother, younger brother was Stan Hollick, who worked as Stan Lasowski, Stan Nielsen, under his own name back in the 50s, 60s. Dara Singh, who was probably the Lou Thesz of India, was the biggest star they ever had, or actually more likely the Hulk Hogan of India, because he was the biggest star that ever worked in India. Another Canadian guy, Goldie Rogers, who worked both coasts of Canada, both the east and west Canada. Don Savage, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of him. Black Jack Daniels, who was, he worked in Georgia some, didn't he, guys? In the 60s, you guys remember seeing him? He came with Stan Kowalski quite a bit.
I don't remember him.
Don't ring no bell with me.
We're not old enough.
I heard that.
Well, I'll get Bill on here in a minute since you claim he's old enough. He probably knows all these guys. Rita Cortez.
Yeah.
Married to Buddy Lee. One of Mula's many exes. Wound up managing Hank Williams Jr. I think she and Buddy Lee had a country music management or a music management company in Nashville. And
they booked a lot of county fairs across the country too. Buddy Lee attractions.
Oh really?
Yeah, they booked. I mean, anything that was out on the fair and festival tour pretty much come out of their office.
Didn't he book Dyesburg too, son?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he did.
I don't know how he got into music after wrestling, but, I mean, if you wanted big action to come to your county fair, that's who you called. Because the Appalachian Fair here where I live, that's who they dealt with for years.
I think, yeah, like Bobby's, I think he was buddies with Hank Jr. That's how he wound up in the music business.
He must have been doing a good job because, I mean, he worked with just about everybody.
Was he a
Red
drummer?
Bastien. What's that?
Was he a drummer, Buddy Lee?
No, you're thinking of Buddy. No, he was a wrestler. He was married to Mula.
Yeah, but didn't he play drums too with some band for a while?
You talking about Buddy Rich?
Buddy Rich is the only drummer I know named Buddy. Buddy Miles. But anyway, Red Bastien's the next name on the list. Did you guys ever get to work with him or around him any? Any of you guys?
I did.
I've been partners with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In Charlotte, North Carolina one time, he tapped me on the chin. And I was out on my feet. I couldn't raise my arms. I could see him and everything. And he said, "You gonna fight back?" I said, "I can't." I couldn't raise my arms. Anyway.
He didn't happen to say sell this just before he hit you, did he?
No, he didn't.
He didn't say daddy said sell, did he?
I'd never been knocked out that way. I was on my feet, couldn't go nowhere, couldn't move my arms. Just standing there.
While we're talking about him, let me get the other half of the Sky Brothers on the line with us. Mr. Bowman, you there?
I'm here, thank you.
Did you happen to hear the Bo reading off that Christmas poster from December 71? You working with Smitty? You and that was probably the only time you and Joe were on the same card that you weren't partner or even coming out of the same dressing room. Joe worked babyface that night, and you worked heel. No, you worked babyface. I guess you both were babyface. Because if he worked with Rocket, Rocket was a heel at that time, and you worked with Smitty, the Blue Yankee. So, but anyway, what we're doing, we're just running down the list of all the folks we've lost this year from the business, and kind of reminiscing about it. Joe said, since you knew Jim Londis, you would know some of these names.
Yeah, him and I were great friends, Londis.
Yeah.
He taught me a lot.
You guys traveled,
yes,
all of you traveled together with Frank Hickey, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, I think George Washington broke Bill in the business.
Who did? I didn't hear the
George
last
Washington.
Part. If Washington wasn't a wrestler, it would have been Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln, that's right. Wrong one. Yeah.
Just
Bill,
because I had
work. Go ahead, Bill.
Just because I had wood teeth, it didn't make me around George Washington, you know.
Were you ever in the ring with Red Bastien, Bill?
Yes, one time.
The same time he hit Joe in the chin?
No, he kicked me in the gonzolas, and that was the end of it.
I told him he didn't have any. That's why he kicked you there.
Right. He was one fine person, though. Really enjoyed him. And he had a good time when he came to the Mobile reunion. He really enjoyed that.
Yeah, this territory down here was one of the few he didn't work in. He worked just about every other, I think, here in Tennessee. But somebody warned him.
He broke Billy Wicks really into the business.
Yeah, yeah. And go ahead, Jeff.
I forgot what it was, Haystack. It was one of them big guys come to Mobile territory and seen all the stuff we were doing down here. And I think it was Lee asked him, says, "Well, you going to spread the word around about what's going on down here?" He said, "No, I don't think I'm going to tell nobody. They won't believe it." But I'd like to say this. This territory here took a small amount of guys and kept rotating them around. They'd be doing a job one day and main event the next, and they really done a good job going here, if you get down to it, what they had to go by.
That's very
so
true.
It worked out great.
Very true. The next name on our list, and Bo, you may know for sure, I think this guy was a Tennessee guy, Buddy Bison.
He was here. I don't know if he was from here. I mean, he worked here for Nick.
He worked as an under the name Buddy Bison. He also worked under Hood as one of the executioners. I can't remember who his partner was. The one picture everybody misidentifies Buddy Bison as being Dr. Jerry Graham because their body shape was similar, but it was not Jerry Graham. Graham never worked under Hood that I know of.
There was a set of executioners here in 65 in Kingsport for Mickey Barnes. They were here most of the summer. So that may have been him.
Yeah, there was Buddy Bison. I can't remember who the other guy was. But, yeah, it was definitely, he was one of them. The next guy I don't think ever worked anywhere but around Florida, so I don't know if any of you guys were familiar with him. He was one of those that did freelance, worked under the hood all the time, just general all-around stuff. Guy by the name of Porter Tyndale.
Didn't know him.
No. Didn't know, of course, here, Don Fields. I guess none of you guys were ever in the ring with Don. I guess he was. You guys just knew him through the office, because his career ended in 63. And I don't even think Bill, you were around in, what, 50, you had your first match in, what, 59 or so?
Yeah, 58.
So do you ever get a chance to work with Don?
Sure.
I thought you started in 57.
I don't know.
That's when we was all out in Chickasaw working, Bill.
Oh, yeah. Good gosh, yes.
Yeah.
But did you guys ever get a chance to see Don work? I don't know what he was like as a worker.
I've seen him, but I don't remember too well.
I got to see him when he was called Don Wayne, Buddy Wayne, not Buddy Wayne, Don Wayne.
Don Wayne, yeah.
Yeah, Don Wayne, yes.
To the beginning, yeah, of his career. Well, how was he compared to Lee and Bobby?
Bobby was a good worker. Lee was the best, and Don was in between. He liked to show how tough he was, and he really wasn't tough, but he liked to show it.
Bobby was a smooth worker. He just until you aggravate him, made him mad, and he buzzed a little bit. But that he knocked me to the floor, and I knew he was shy, and so I reached between his legs there and around and grinning by the tights in the back. And I pulled him out where he could feel air on his tail. I said, I just showed your butt, because he was dragging around. He wouldn't make a comeback. He made a comeback in both feet and both hands at the same time. As bad as old Chico Cortez was selling pictures and that and more. And you know him, Speedy Hatfield, they ribbed each other all the time. And he was selling pictures. Well, somebody didn't show up, so I asked, would he work? He said, yeah. And he got out there, and old Speedy was ribbed him and told him, says, you think you can get any heat? He said, I can get every chair in this National Guard Armory in the ring. And sure enough, he got up there, and every chair out there was in the ring in a little while. So...
Rocket told a story one time about Chico. Somebody didn't show up, and Nick asked him if he could work. So he had the Cuban assassin gimmick where he had the fatigues. And said he started out of the dressing room, had a machete, and said Nick stopped him. Said, no, you can't take the machete. And said he told him, he said, the boy, he said, don't you be out there throwing no powder, no salt or nothing. And he said about 2 minutes into the match, he said, you couldn't see out there for the powder and stuff. It was floating around in the air. And he had stuff in every pocket on them fatigues.
The little outfit that run around here, this guy that I know, Joey Barrett, he promotes cage fights too. And he wrestled. He's a pretty tough old boy, but he liked old Mike Boyette.
Hippy Boyette. So he got him in on a deal with his wrestling nightclubs. And he went and picked Boyette at night, and he got there, and Boyette had a tuxedo on. And he says, he got there, and he told him, he said, come in with a machete or something during something going on and running the ring. He said, they got that point in the match. And they looked for Boyette and looking for him, and then finally they found him up the bar drinking. And I said, you forgot to go in the ring. He said, oh, I'm sorry. He took off running up there for that machete. he was entertaining and so natural. He done things just make you laugh. Next name on our list, Bob, Jerry, I know you worked with him, Bobby Jaggers.
Anytime.
Were you guys in Tennessee when he was there as Bobby Main, Joe and Bill?
What was his name?
Well, his name was Bobby Jaggers, but he worked in Tennessee as Bobby Main. He teamed with Charlie Fulton. And that may have been after you guys were already gone from Tennessee.
Might have been.
I want to say it was 73, 74, somewhere around in there.
Yeah, I knew Charlie Fulton pretty well, but I didn't know the other name.
Charlie Fulton wrestled with Frank Morrell a lot, too.
Yeah, I think this was after Charlie and Frank were together. Because they were the Mighty Yankees, and then they were unmasked, and they were the Morrell brothers.
I think Bobby was here like 76, 77.
Was it that late?
Yeah, I think it was that. I think it was later.
Who was their manager, Bo? Wasn't it Steve Clements?
Yeah.
Well, Steve Clements was killed in 76, 77. So whenever he had... Bruce Bernard were in Detroit working for Forehead. He was killed.
It wasn't long after he left here when he died.
When he left Tennessee, he went there. When was he in Georgia, Bobby? Do you remember?
74, 70, or probably 75.
Okay. So, yeah, it was all around that same time.
Jaggers came through here and worked for a while, too.
Did he?
Yeah, he wasn't here long. He was middle of the card, but he was here for a while.
Where did you work with him, Jerry? Kansas City or Texas?
Kansas City, yeah.
Okay. Which is where he was from, Dunlap, right? Or
somewhere out that way, yeah.
All
right. I thought he was originally from around Portland.
I don't know.
Cause he grew up watching Moondog Maine. That's why he took the name.
Could be.
I think he was originally from Vancouver, Washington.
Okay.
I grew up watching Maine too, but I was watching to see what he was going to do to me next.
You watched him fall from the top rope to the floor.
Oh, jeez. Worst thing he ever did to me was the worst thing he ever did. I would come out of the ring one night in high school somewhere, and I got back here, and my bag was on the floor, and it had about 25 of them high school locker locks on my bag. I couldn't get it open. It had all these locks on there. And the principal come in, and I asked the principal, I said, sir, I said, can you help me get these off? And Lonnie's sitting over there saying, sir, I don't know where you got them locks there, but you got to watch him. He's bad about stealing stuff. He said, we try to watch him, but, finally got my bag open, son, and there was about 25 brand-new softballs he had gotten out of somebody's locker or something and put in my bag.
Bo, next name. Go ahead.
I want to ask Bo something. Bo.
Yeah.
There's a guy back when Bill and I was coming up to East Tennessee years and years ago, and he had a job there, and he wrestled part-time. It seemed like he had a clip lip or stuttered or something. You remember who that was?
No, I'm not sure which. A lot of the guys that worked here, they all had jobs because Mickey Barnes' little territory here was so close they could work and still make the towns every night.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys that came out of here. Frank Morrell being one of them.
Yeah, I remember all them guys, Whitey and all them guys, but this guy just... Bill, you remember him, don't you? Remember the one I pulled the rib? Remember the one I pulled the rib on talking about people that work at night, their wives all run around?
Would it be Bill Caney?
Huh?
Bill Caney?
I don't remember his name. I just thought maybe if I heard it, I might recognize it.
He was from Atlanta, but he ended up, he came here to work for Mickey Barnes in the 50s, and he lived here until he died in the 80s. And he worked as a night watchman at the glass plant.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but he wasn't
a real big guy.
But, no, but him and Jim White, they rode back to Nashville with Bill and I, and they were sitting in the back seat. And I pulled old Herb Welch rib on him. I act like I was talking to Bill. Started telling him about how, you know, these guys, they go off, you know, and work at night, stay gone, and their wives get lonely at night, and they find them a man, and all kinds of stuff. Oh, Herb Welch pulled that on me, and I was hating my wife after that. So I pulled it on him, and finally he spoke up, and he says, I don't think my wife run around on me. You know, she's 9 months pregnant. And I said, well, we ain't talking about you, but a guy said, but, you know, some pregnant women mess around until the day they have the baby. And so I started talking to Bill. And so then when we got to Sam Davis Hotel, he went straight for the phone booth. And we was all staying there. And I had to go by the phone booth going to the elevator, and he had the phone booth open, and he's on there talking to her, and I just walked by, and I said, excuse me, I said, you know, they could have a warfarin right there with them while they're talking to you, and get on the elevator. But then old Woodrow Bass was listening to all that, and I thought he was up to date on that rib, and because he'd been around Herb Welch a lot, so he went and called his wife, too. So we got both of them that night.
You're not talking about Jimmy Hyde, are you?
Huh?
Are you talking about Jimmy Hyde?
That might be. That sounds more like it.
Yep, that sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He worked down here as Gentleman Jim. Jimmy Hyde, he was one of the Blue Yankees with Curtis Smith before Billy Spears was. And he was up in Tennessee. They called him. He was a Bass, because was Woodrow Bass, and he was Percy Bass. And he came back down here and worked as Jim Bass. So that's probably who you're talking about. He's on that disc I gave you. There's a picture of him on that disc I gave you.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. But in the picture I put on that disc, he's got dark hair. But that sounds like who you're talking about, Jimmy Hyde.
I believe it is. That rings a bell, it seems like.
What was the guy that worked East Tennessee, that was a cop, that injured his leg real bad?
Ed Wolf. Yeah, I knew him really well. He passed away about 4 or 5 years ago.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he was strong as a bull. Even after he lost a leg, he was still probably 280. I mean,
remember them springs he used to work out with?
Yep.
In the dressing room? They're stretching them springs out. He must have had 10 or 15 of them on there. And I had one that had about 4 or 5. And I'm over there stretching and everything. He's over there pulling that, and like the springs are broke, man. He's pulling down so easy. And I said, let's swap up and I'm going to try that. I couldn't even budge that damn thing. He wouldn't even move.
He stayed with the police department. He worked there at the front desk at the Kingsport Police for years after he lost his leg.
Yeah, he lost it and he got caught up in the chair, didn't he?
Yeah. He took a bump out of the ring. He hit the wood chair and it broke, and the leg of the chair went all the way through his thigh.
Gee whiz.
And he got gangrene. They had to take it off.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Anyway. The next name on our list, Jared may have been the only one that ever worked with this guy, Stan Pulaski or Stan Vachon.
I never worked with him.
I thought maybe you guys may have crossed paths down in Florida. Did you guys ever work with him, Joe, Bill?
I remember the name Pulaski, but I don't remember working with him.
Yeah, he worked under that name as Stan Vachon.
Mm-hmm.
Stan Vachon sounds familiar.
Well, then Vachon Brothers, Bill, probably what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Well, he worked at, he was a state brother. He worked with Butcher there in Georgia in the late 60s. They had a big program with the Torres brothers by the time you guys were doing the intern gimmick here in Mobile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next is Alex Karras, who most people know from football and TV, but he was actually a pro wrestler before he started playing pro football.
Mm-hmm.
I guess his biggest claim to fame was the fight he and Bruiser staged in Harris's bar, and then they sold out the Olympia Auditorium in Detroit over that whole thing. And the other guy, I knew this other guy because he's been coming to our reunions for years, but never knew he worked, never saw him work. I think he was mainly a referee, but he was probably Skandar Akbar's closest friend, Mike Rykoff.
Yeah, I didn't know he worked.
Yeah, he was a referee, but supposedly he worked as the great bolo or something around Louisiana for McGurk back in those days.
Is that the guy with the salt and pepper hair and a little black beard?
Yep, that was him.
Yeah. He was always taking pictures and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He always came with Danny Hodge.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
I take a lot of pictures, but I tell you what I'm doing. I'm building an album. I want to show my grandkids why I can't walk very well anymore.
I've seen that album, Jerry, and he's got your picture right up front.
I don't doubt that. Don't doubt that.
No, you didn't have Jerry's in there, did you?
Yeah, I put Jerry's picture in there, him and Ted.
That's right. I do remember seeing it now, because I remember seeing it. Yeah.
That must be on that other disc, Joe, that I didn't see.
Yeah. It is. It's one I hadn't finished making pictures of, Bill, but it's, I think I remember seeing Jerry on there because I seen him take a bump. First one I ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'm just joking, man.
I told Dromo one time, I said, I got a deal worked out where we're going to sell advertising on the bottom of the wrestler's boots. We're going to make some money. I said, but we can't sell yours. And he said, why? I said, because your boots don't ever leave the mat. Wouldn't nobody ever see it.
And
this next name on our list, he was a local Georgia guy, David Deaton. I know Joel more than I knew David, but they worked down in Florida together. And I didn't realize that Joel wasn't really his brother until David passed away, and I read about it. Did they ever work with you, Jerry, when you were...
I worked with Joel, but I never worked with him. I didn't know him.
Michael, hey, were they the Bruno brothers? Were they the Bruno brothers in Atlanta?
Yes. Yes, they used to do jobs as the Bruno brothers, yeah.
That's what I thought.
And then they went down to Florida. I don't know if Tommy Gilbert was booking or who was booking, but they down in Florida just early to mid-80s, Gilbert was down there, and they brought in Jim Kent and the Bounty Hunters, the Novaks.
They worked in Charlotte for a little bit in the 80s, too.
Okay, well, he was after
They called him Hoss Deaton then.
Yeah, exactly. It was right after that the Novaks got mad at whoever down there with Graham, and they took off, so they brought the Deatons in as the Bounty Hunters and replaced them. That had to have been 83, 84, somewhere around there, just before Florida went under.
I mean, what was that Indian's name that wrestled there that had the hair weave? You remember him?
Indian that had the hair weave.
Yeah, they told me he was Indian. He had a hair weave, and I think his last name was Rivers.
Tracy Rivers.
Yeah.
Tracy Rivers, that's a guy from Warner Robins.
Yeah, I believe that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think
he's on your disc too, Joe.
He played professional baseball, and he.
Yeah, that's him.
He's the one that Tom was going. You know, he had all the ability, he had the athleticism, but you know, it never clicked between his ears. So Tom,
I know what you mean.
Tom decided he's going to make him a referee. So that's the guy that was in Columbus that night when Dickie had that junior heavyweight tournament, and he went around the ringside and he picked out four judges, one on each side, and he gave them each one of them had a red and a blue disc. And the first match was Ted and Bearcat Wilkerson.
Uh-huh.
10-minute draw. Well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
The deal was the judge is going, you know, it's a draw, so the judges are going to decide who wins. Well, two of the judges was black. They throwed the red disc in there for Bearcat. The other two judges is white. They throwed the blue disc in for Ted. So now it's up to the referee to make the decision. Now, this is the first match on the card. And I'm standing back there by the dressing room next to Ernesto. We're standing there watching. Tracy looked at him two discs, and he throwed both of them down. He wouldn't make a decision. Ernesto's eyes got big as silver dollars. That ended his refereeing career.
What's happened? I had Rivers, and I was sitting in the corner, and I grabbed him by the hair, and I was going to drag him out of the corner and throw him in the unturnbuckle. I started out that corner, and he kind of pulled back a little bit, and his hair started coming off. And I just scalped the Joker, man. I turned it loose. I didn't know he had a hair weave. I said, I just stopped him. I said, what's wrong with his head? Hell, it's falling apart. As bad as I used to do when I throw him in the corner sometime and they'd stand there breathing and the mouth wide open, I'd stick my hand in their mouth and thumb under their chin and drag them out the other way. I drug some false teeth out one time.
At least you never nipple peeled them.
Oh, gee.
Never what?
Bobby and I were some little independent show several years ago, and this guy backed the dude in the corner and grabbed each nipple and peeled him out of the corner by the nipples. I turned to Bobby, I said, Lord, I'm glad Trauma never thought of doing something like that. Oh, man. Anyway, back to our list. Go ahead.
I keep hearing all these names and all these stories, and I think about all the people Joe and I had the privilege of working with through the years. Good gosh. There's hundreds. Just so many of them, you know, that we worked with in Tennessee and Carolinas and all around. And it just blows my mind. I'm just glad you haven't said my name. I'm 79 years old, but I'm still not dead yet. So anyway.
Well, you died 2 weeks, 2 months ago, remember?
Oh, that's right.
According to Pensacola newspaper.
Yeah,
anyway.
Really.
They ran an obituary on Bill Bowman. But it wasn't our Bill Bowman.
It scared me when I saw my name in there.
I heard that.
Okay. The next name on our list is a gentleman by the name of Ted Herbert. Was big up around Montreal, Toronto, places like that. After him, and this was, I didn't know this gentleman passed away, or I'd have mentioned him on our show. I saw him work several times, and I'm sure some of you guys probably worked with him. Siegfried Stanky. That back in November. I didn't know that. Any of you guys ever work with him?
I didn't.
Yeah.
Sure, you worked with him back in when you were in Oklahoma. So he worked for Watts many years, or McGirt many years, and then he was out in Texas for a while. He passed through here. Was down in Florida. He worked a lot of places. Then, of course, we've got Brad Armstrong. Yeah, boss.
Yep.
I think Mike Graham, the week before him, Mike Graham, lost Mike. That whole situation was just heartbreaking. And, of course, just here within the last few weeks, Buddy Roberts and the hippie, Boyette. So, you guys were in, the Blondes were in All South when you guys were there, weren't they?
Yeah, they started, they were here in Atlanta, and when the split came, they went with Ann. They stayed with Ann about a month, and then they left, and then 2 weeks later, they were on the card in Atlanta for the NWA office.
Yep.
I first saw them down in Florida with, they had Humperdinck with them as their manager. Ooh, they got some heat. Oh, they were something. And that's all the people from North America. And I've made a list of course, you guys probably won't know any of these, but these are well-known people who worked in the UK over the years.
Is that up at Kingsport?
Yes, no. A little bit east of Kingsport.
Oh.
And this year they lost Dave Bond, Ray Diamond, Judo Al Marquette, Steve Haggerty, Dave Hines, who's no relation to Billy Boy or Bad Boy, Professor Adewasser, Bernard Murray, Alf Cadman, Ace Alcard, and Ian St. John. So, and I wanted to mention them because even though they never worked in the States, they're still part of our brotherhood. So, 55 names in all. And like I said, that's just guys from our era. That's not counting, you know, people who worked, you know, more in Bo's time frame or were still working. There's probably another 35, 40 names on top of that. So, not been a good year for the business.
What about them K brothers? Are they still living?
Rudy's gone.
Dead, and Rudy's dead.
Yeah. I think Leo Burt's still alive.
Rudy's dead.
Uh-huh. And Leo's about the only one out of all of them, Jerry. Leo Burke. Which he was Terry K, wasn't he?
I can't remember what the names, but we wrestled the K brothers up in the Carolinas, Joe and I did. And they were one hell of a workers, I know that.
Yes, they were. They were fantastic.
Yep. Yep.
And of course, they pretty much owned the Nova Scotia area. They were, that was pretty much their territory.
Oh, yeah.
The Cormiers. There were four or five of them. There was Rudy. He worked under
Leo
the name of Rudy Bell as well. The Beast, which was Yvonne Cormier. Terry Martin.
He worked in Louisiana, too.
Yeah, he did. He did. Terry Martin, Terry Burke, or Terry K was Leo Burke. I think he's the only one still alive. And then there was a Bobby Cat. I can't remember what his name was.
When we were in Kansas City, it was Tommy and Terry Martin. That was Leo and Terry. They're both still alive.
Okay.
I talked to Leo last year.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I liked all them boys pretty good when he was in Carolina.
They were good workers.
Yeah, they were.
When they were leaving, they tried to get Joe and I to come up to Canada. I know that.
You should have gone.
Yep, we should have. But we were doing okay there in the Carolinas.
They paid good, too.
Carolina, we were doing better working in the middle of the card than we was most places working main event.
That's for sure.
Yeah, so it's more relaxing there. course, if you was on the top every night, then you worked. You had to go for interviews all the time and everything. But I really, that's my favorite territory out of all of my work.
That's pretty common of everybody that worked up there. They'll tell you
the story about working up there, and I went out on Lake Wally with my boat. I went out on Lake Wally. I was married then. My wife was working not too far from the lake, and we lived right there by close to it. I went out there on my boat, and I was laying out, anchored out off the area where a lot of people are swimming. And, you know, with them waves rocking, you know, you lay out there and get a suntan. It just relaxes you, you know. So I'm laying out there with the seats out, and I hear some girls talking. And so they kept getting louder and louder. So all of a sudden, I seen a hand on the side of my boat. I look, there's three girls getting in my boat. And my wife working right down the street I had then. So anyway, I'm thinking, man, what them girls doing? They climbed in the boat, and I said, what do y'all think you're doing? They said, we're going to ride them with you. I said, no, you ain't. Well, you can't throw them overboard because they get you if they drown, you know. So anyway, I thought, well, if I ride them out there in the middle of the... Huh?
No, that's you just echoing.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so I go ride them out the middle of the lake, bring them back, and tell them they had to get out. So here come a boy by himself, and one of them waved at him, and he waved back, so I motioned him over there. And he come over there, and I got him to take them girls and put them in his boat. So I didn't think any more of it. So about a month later, the girl I was married to says, well, we'll go out there and lay in the boat and get some sun like you do. That ought to be fun. I said, okay. We're at the same place, anchored out. And I done fixed her seat where she could lay down. And had mine laid out. And I fixed them to lay down, and I heard them voices again. And I looked, and there's them three girls swimming from my boat. Well, I cranked that boat up with one hand, and I pulled the anchor up with the other, holding the rope with my leg, pushing against the side of the boat and all. And I'm taking off with the anchor still halfway down, and I'm leaving. And she says, what are you doing? I said, man, it's just too dang noisy here. I got to get out of this place. I never would explain that one.
What you don't know is Bill was the one sending those girls out to your boat.
Yeah, really.
Hey, one time on that same lake, it's a dammed up lake, so some places out there is 100 foot deep. And so I had a little tri-hull boat, which had 50 horsepower Mercury on it. And when you take off in it, it pushes water. So it don't take off real fast. If you're on skis, it makes it rough. And so I bought some of the widest skis I could find. And anyway, Billy Hines and my friend had they was in the boat, and I'm out there, and they're trying to get me up. Well, it wouldn't pull up fast enough for me to get up on top of the water. And kept on, Billy Hines laughing at me and everything else, hollering, you big SOB, you stopping the boat, all kind of stuff. So anyway, he just kept on and kept on, so finally I just turned loose of the rope, started swimming for the boat. Well, Billy started putting his life jacket on, because I guess I telegraphed what I was fixing to do. I threw him overboard, and he had the life jacket on, but I didn't know he couldn't swim. But anyway, I said, what'd you put that life jacket on? He said, I can't swim.
No, the only liquid, he kept liquid inside, not outside.
I know it, man. Yes. He could drink night and day. Only thing he had to do is take his nap every morning. So, I was there in Georgia when he went in the hospital on account of that drinking, you know. And he's in pretty rough shape. I was in there when there was three doctors worked on him at one time trying to keep him going.
Yes, sir.
That was a pretty rough deal. You know, he found out all kind of ways because his wife, Faye, would tell him, if you don't quit drinking, I'm well, he'd find out some way to do it without her seeing him. But she'd see when he got drunk that he was drunk. In Panama City, she had told him that. And he come in that night. Next morning, he said, well, she's watching to see if he drinks. And so he said, I'm going to lay out in the yard there. And it's real sandy there. I said, I'm going to lay out in the yard and get some sun. And she kept watching out the window to see what he was doing. And she couldn't catch him doing anything. But he come in, he was drunk as everything. And so she just finally told him, said, Billy, you just tell me how you done it, because I know you're drinking, you're drunk. He said, just tell me how you doing it, and I won't say another word. He bought a pint of whiskey, a vodka, and put it down in the sand that night, took a blanket out there and a straw and cut a hole in the blanket. And when he lay over face down to get some sun, he was sucking up that vodka. So, but anyway, he could drink, but I can't say much about it because I did for a while. So,
well, guys, we got about 15 minutes left. And this is, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is going to be our last show for this year. We'll be back on January 10th. Unless I find need for some more NyQuil, I probably won't.
That's how you get if your room open.
I just want to thank you guys for joining us. Wish all you guys Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Same to you guys.
Big Brother Bobby, I'll be up there tomorrow evening sometime.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, what time does the jet land?
What time are you coming home, huh?
Yeah, I'll get out and light the candles on the runway.
Well, I'll probably be there for you you get home. I'll keep your wife entertained for you.
All right.
Dinner's on me tomorrow night. You guys just decide where you want to go.
Michael said dinner's on him tomorrow night. We'll be at the Crystal tomorrow.
I'm only 4 hours away. I may join you then.
Yeah, Mike's big spender. He don't mind when you might get a bowl of chili with them crystals.
He's not like Buddy Wayne. We all went to Memphis. He drew a big house, and he said he had to come and ask me one night. He said, where y'all going? I said, this place down by where I live off Summer Avenue. He said, I'm going with you. So he went with me and some of the boys. We was in there. Buddy Wayne said, drink. When Buddy Wayne drinks, everybody drinks. He said, eat. When Buddy Wayne eats, everybody eats. The woman come over. She said, is this all on one bill? He said, no. When Buddy Wayne pays, everybody pays.
I'm going to say goodnight, you guys. Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, too, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to all y'all, guys.
Hang on, Joe. I got one for you.
Okay.
I got to share one with you. You might have heard it. I don't know. This guy calls the dairy, and he tells the dairy that his wife has been reading these beauty magazines, and she's been talking about wanting to take a milk bath. And he tells the guy, he said, now, I don't know if there's any benefit to this or not, but I'm going to surprise her for Christmas. He said, but what I want to know, he said, if you got a truck or something, well, you can bring the milk out here. He said, I know I can go to the store and get it. He said, but then I got to contend with the jugs and hauling it home and throwing it away. He said, you know, the guy at the dairy says, well, sir, he said, believe it or not, he said, we get this a lot. He said, we get a lot of calls for this. And he said, yes, we have a truck. We'll bring it out there. He said, I just got a couple of questions. He said, sir, do you want pasteurized? No guy sat there and thought about it a minute, and he said, no, sir, I don't believe so. He said, I think I want it just a little bit past her butt. He said, I think she's flashing her eyes if she needs to.
Well, let me tell you this. Hey, let me tell you this, Bobby. This sailor had been out to sea for 2 years. So he come back in on land, and he went and looked him up a prostitute, and he says, "You know, I've been on, I'm a sailor, and I've been out on that ship for 2 years, and I hadn't seen a woman, and I need a woman." He said, "What would you charge me to make me happy?" She said, "I charge you $500." And he says, "She's so beautiful and built so fine," and he says, that's not bad, I'll pay it." So when he got their clothes off and they was getting together there, it was all over for him. He couldn't do nothing else. And so he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I just couldn't hold back." And she said, "Okay, you're doing 3 knots." He said, "What do you mean 3 knots? Is it not in? Not getting a rain check and not getting your money back."
You guys have all been to Louisiana, or both of you have been to Louisiana?
Yes, I have. That's the hottest place on earth.
Well, then you guys will all appreciate this. When I was down in Houma with the circus, there was a restaurant I went to a couple of times called Boudreaux and Thibodeau. And Boudreaux and Thibodeau were. Anybody that has ever heard Justin Wilson, he always talked about going Thibodeau. So they named the restaurant. Anyway, I get their daily joke every day, an email with their daily joke. The one I got today was Boudreaux and Thibodeau went hunting and got lost in the woods. Thibodeau said, "I heard the best thing to do if you was lost in the woods is to fire 3 shots in the air." So they did that and waited a while. And no rescue party showed up, so they fired 3 more shots. Still no response. Thibodeau said, "Well, I guess we better fire 3 more. "Okay," said Boudreaux, "but somebody better come soon. We bet out of arrows." Joe, you're talking about old people. A lady would turn 90 years old, and she decided that she had always wanted to go on a cruise, so she signed up for a cruise. So she's standing on the deck as they're pulling in the gangplank for the bon voyage, and the big gust of wind blew up. Well, she grabbed her hat because she had just bought her hat. She bought it special to go on that cruise, so she grabbed her hat, and when she did, the wind blew her dress up over her head. And one of the yeomen or whatever they are on a ship ran up to her and was trying to help her pull her dress back down, and she pushed him away, and he said, "But ma'am, your dress is up over your head and everybody in the world can see." And she said, "Young man, what's under this dress is 90 years old. I just bought this hat yesterday." But anyway,
that's like this old couple sitting on the front porch. And they said, "Rooster's out there topping all them hens." And they sitting there in their rocking chair. She taps him on the arm and said, "Paul, don't you wish you could still do that?" He said, "I could, Ma, if I had a different hen every night."
Oh, man. Well, guys, I'm going to wrap it up. And I appreciate you guys all joining us. And like I said, you guys have Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we'll be back on the 10th of January. We'll get together and do this again. And hopefully, Bobby, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. Bo, you still there?
I'm still here.
Get the 20-second book plug in.
It's on sale. KingofKingsport.com went on sale Monday.
I'd have put a deposit down on one, man. Am I drawing interest on my money?
you got the very first copy coming. they go to print January the 3rd.
Good.
So we
good.
Will.
I am looking forward to it.
Well, you know, I wrote the first book in 18 days. This book has taken me over a year because every time I write something, I go, "Is that in the first book?" And I got to go back and read through to make sure I'm not retelling the same stories. But this book, it's got a little bit of everything, and it's just a collection of funny stories, just like we've been telling here for 25 years of my time in the wrestling business. And I've got one chapter called "Things That Make Me Angry" that I think all of you will agree on. And then I've got one that's just one-liners, quotes, and conversations I have remembered from hearing in the dressing room over the years. So,
But I would say those two chapters alone are worth the price of the book.
Well, I'll tell you one more. He let me have a sneak peek at one chapter in the book. It's called Just Another Day. And I'm sure Joe and Bill and Mike, you can all go with this. Things that other people would find as odd, unique, out of the ordinary, crazy, should never happen. To the guys in the business, it was just another day.
It's not every day you leave a 6'6", 300-pound French-Canadian alongside the road because he's trying to pick a fight with everybody. It was just another day.
Just another day.
I've got a chapter on midgets. I've got a chapter on the good people I've met in the business. I've got one called In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash in Advance. It's about promoters that we all can identify with.
So you had one on midgets?
Yeah, I got one on midgets.
Well, Dundee has his own book. What are you doing that for?
he'll be calling me in 2 minutes now.
I'm just kidding, Superstar. He'll hit me up on a circus lot somewhere. I'll be sleeping with the elephants.
So I want to say this. Same thing. I hope everybody has a wonderful Christmas and a great New Year. But I enjoy this show every week. This and football is my release to get away from everything. And Misty knows on Thursdays at 8 o'clock I'm going in the office and I'm going to listen to the boys talk for 2 hours. And I really appreciate being on here every chance I get, and I appreciate the friendship I got with everybody that's on here.
We're going to see you in Mobile?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good, good.
We're coming in on Wednesday.
Good, good, good.
Well, everybody just remember what this holiday's about.
Yes, sir.
Right. Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Guys, have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I'm going to go take the garbage out and do my husbandly duties.
Good. Make sure you do that before I get there tomorrow.
I'm fixing to handle it, sir. Fixing to handle it.
All right, guys.
Yo, how about Christmas?
Good night, guys.
Guys.
I love
later.
Y'all so much, man.
Love you so much. Good night, guys.
See you guys. Bye.
Good night, guys. All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.